Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. Going back to his days as a documentary filmmaker, from through films like Newsfront to A Clear and Present Danger and Patriot Games, the films he made in this last decade, which include Rabbit Proof Fence and Quiet American, Philip Noyce has an eye, I think, for taking stories that feel like it could come out of today's headlines and turning them into movies. His newest film, Salt, starring Angelina Jolie, feels especially like that. It starts with a prisoner exchange that could have been taken right off CNN. First of all, Phil, thanks so much for coming back.
Pleasure to be here again.
You do still kind of train a journalist eye on the stories that you do. They all feel like they could be, to some extent, almost documentaries if they weren't, in fact, fictional pieces.
Well, of course, the story of Salt, which is the story of a CIA clandestine operative played by Angelina Jolie, who plays Evelyn Salt, is the story of a woman who is accused of being a Russian sleeper spy. And of course, up until about 2 weeks ago, when people saw the movie, they would have said, come on, you're kidding. This could never happen in the real world. Of course, weeks ago, 11 alleged Russian spies were arrested in New York City. And some of them looked and behaved just like Angelina's American spy in Salt. Of course, she's accused of being a Russian spy. Got to go to the movie to see whether she really is. But yeah, you know, in all the movies that I've made, I've always sort of gone back to research to try and give the actors and the texture of the movie a basis, a foundation. So in this movie, you know, we spent months researching not only the subject of sleeper spies, American sleeper spies working in other countries, Russians working here, all nationalities sleeping in each other's countries, but also all the details of the film. The prisoner exchange that opens the film, of course, yes, is between North Korea and the Americans. And that prisoner exchange was actually choreographed by one of the extras who turned up. And I asked all the extras to put up their hands to see if anyone had any military experience so he or she could teach the others how to march. A guy puts up his hand and says, yes, but also I was a guard at the border between North Korea and the demilitarized zone. And so we got talking, and then I realized that here was my mole, my research subject. And he appears in the scene, but he also choreographed all of the details of the prisoner exchange, which is very, very accurate. And, you know, I think in a film like Salt, which has, well, a fantastical story, many serpentine twists and turns, is a sort of a roller coaster popcorn summer movie on the one hand. But because of all that, you sort of need to ground the audience and ground your characters and ground the story in minutiae that's realistic. And that's what we tried to do.
But it's also that moment, and generally it comes about a third of the way into the film, but it starts here, the moment where your protagonist is completely exposed and vulnerable. It's happened in almost every film you've done since Newsfront.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that the Hitchcock formula? You know, you're introduced to a character, you get to know them, you empathize with them, and then something goes wrong, and all that you've been introduced to is put into play, is put into question, and the rest of the film is them resolving that conflict.
There's that almost always that point of the bloody but unbowed depiction of the protagonist in your films, you know, sort of beaten down but not quite given up, and that you start the film with this one I thought was really interesting because you've been away from making these kinds of movies for about 10 years.
We put that scene at the beginning because that's not the turning point of the story.
Sure.
The turning point is when is happens about 20 minutes later when the Russian defector comes in and says he's got some information and tells an elaborate story of a KGB program to train sleeper spies by taking children from right across the Soviet Union and her colonies, such as the African colonies, Angola and so on, Cuba, and sending them to a training camp where from infancy they will be trained not to be Russians, but to be Americans.
Yeah.
Or members of any other country that they plan to send these people to. And about 20 minutes into the movie, the Russian defector reveals the name of one of these particular deep cover spies, and he says the name of that spy is Evelyn Salt. And of course, That's the character played by Angelina Jolie.
It's the treatment, my guess, of director Philip Noyce. His new film as director is Salt. I just wonder if you felt to some extent, because Quiet American, Catch a Fire, Rabbit Proof Friends, films you've been here talking about in the past, have been films you talked about initially just how you were surprised to find your way into them. And was it a surprise to you to find your way doing this too? I mean,
well, you know, I've always been interested in spies, and that's because my dad was a spy. He worked for a Z Special Force, which was the Australian equivalent of the OSS.
Oh, my gosh.
So in the 50s and right through till his death about 4 years ago, I was entertained by stories of sabotage, of camouflage, of subterfuge. He always said to me, the greatest weapon in the world is not any military weapon. The human being is the greatest weapon. And these were stories of fighting behind the Japanese lines. And, you know, we won that war. It was a righteous war. So my spy stories were very romantic. When I was a kid growing up in Griffith, a small town in the Australian outback, I used to amuse myself after school by following people in the streets. I'd pick on someone that I didn't know and just tail them, watching, waiting until they revealed their secrets. And there were many secrets in that little town to be revealed. So I've always been interested in spies. And by chance, I was asked to do Patriot Games, and that started it. I suddenly found myself in a world that I felt that I was born to be in, except I didn't have to be captured or interrogated or put myself in any danger. I had Harrison Ford to do that. Later on, Brendan Fraser, of course, in The Quiet American. And now Angelina Jolie is my spy that I can spy through.
But does that sense of romance of that sense of righteousness that your dad had in talking about Japan and World War II, does that lead to that sort of the fact that your heroes are often indomitable? I mean, this sort of they can't be defeated because there's that sense of romance that you're talking about that you bring to these
stories? Well, it's a sense of rightness, yeah. But although we can't talk too much about Angelina Jolie's character, because the whole question that the movie asks is, who is Salt? And by the end of the movie, you'll realize that Salt doesn't necessarily know the answer to that either.
That's exactly. I mean, basically, I thought you start the movie with her being led out of the prison and being tortured, because you want us to be as much in the dark about this as she is, as much, in fact, as her husband is about this.
Well, you know, the spy is the ultimate actor, except for a deep cover mole, a sleeper spy, you're not an actor, because the actor is able to go home and take off their mask. The deep cover spy has to keep the mask on 24 hours a day. And that's you asked me, how did I find my way into this? Well, I found it in not just because of those stories of my dad, but because also for about 15 years, I've really been fascinated with the subject of sleeper spies. The question that I've always asked, and in some ways the accusations that are leveled at Angelina's character in this movie gave me a chance to investigate that question of, okay, you're prepared from childhood to be an American, even though your parents are Russian. You go to America, say, in your teenage years, and then you're put to sleep for 15, 20 years as you work your way into American society, up a ladder, wherever it is, in government, in administration, in the armed forces. And then finally you're called to duty. But what happens if you've actually become an American and not a Russian? And that question's always fascinated me, the process of indoctrination, how you produce Pavlov's dog in a human, and then what happens on that day.
By the way, let me say it's the treatment, I guess, of director Philip Noyce's new film as director is Salt.
People who have followed the publicity for Salt might have seen that there's a game, an online game called Day X exists. And Day X is the day in the film, and it seems like it's just the invention of Kurt Wimmer, wonderful Hollywood screenwriter, but it's not. It's real. Day X was the day designated by the KGB where all of the illegals, that's what they called the sleeper spies, would rise up. And on that day, when war started between the Soviet Union and the West, that would be the day on which the sleeper spies would rise up and commit acts of biological warfare, assassination, and destruction of various things in their host countries.
Basically destroying the infrastructure of the country.
Exactly. It's all real. And what you see in SALT, what we've seen with the alleged 11 spies in New York City, is the tip of the iceberg. If there's 11 spies in New York City, do you really think there's only 11? There's 1,100.
And basically we...
And are they housewives? No.
No.
Of course they're not housewives. They're not sent to go and sit in the suburbs. They're sent here, and we send them there, and the Chinese send them to Korea, and the Pakistanis send them to India, and vice versa, in order to work their way up into positions of power. Because if you have, for example, the leader of a country is actually from the enemy country, it's the ultimate weapon.
It is that. But it's, as we talk about this, this idea of the human as a weapon and being tested could have been your last five films. We could be talking about The Bone Collector. We could be talking about Rapper Fence. We could be talking about Catch a Fire. We could be talking about Quiet American. I mean, that line of that person being a weapon and how that person is being used as a weapon and how much that person can stand to be tested as well. I mean, finally, for you, so often, it's a question of physical endurance of test. And I wonder if that was a part of those stories that your dad told you.
It was
you
a part of the stories, because his stories were about endurance. About operating behind the lines, improvisation to survive.
Fear of being captured as well?
Fear of being captured and killing.
I know you must have had, in fact, we've talked about this, I know you've had other studio offers in the last 10 years. What made you decide to do this one?
You know, I went back to Australia after Bone Collector, which, of course, I did with Angelina just over 10 years ago. I thought I'd had enough of the studio system, and I had. I made the Quiet American, Rabbit Proof Fence, and then went to South Africa to make Catch a Fire. I love making those movies, and all that time I employed a wonderful assistant here in Los Angeles while I was away. She had a great job because her job was just to read scripts. And eventually, finally, in 2007, after reading for 5 years, she sent me an email and said, I found one. And it was SALT. I read it, and I realized that she was right, and it was worth that 5 years of Beatrice working for me to find it, because here was a story that I really connected to. And I connected to it because of the themes that run through it and the things that you've spoken of. It was it seemed to be the film or the story that involved all the elements that I'd been interested in all my other movies. No matter how you did the film, this idea of someone who's accused of being something and then has to go on the run, and then the movie becomes an investigation by others and herself about her true nature. That fascinated me, because it seemed like a new way of telling a story.
A story that, in fact, if you hadn't come up with these other ways around it, it might have felt a bit too familiar, mightn't it?
Yes, exactly.
It's The Treatment. We'll be back with more of my guest, Philip Noyce. His newest film as director, of course, is SALT. More to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is Philip Noyce. His new film as director is SALT. You've been so many different places. It's almost like you've used this as a way to sort of explore the world for yourself, too. You've traveled so much in doing these films.
But so many times I've returned to Washington, D.C. during that time.
Really?
For research, yeah.
Okay.
On all the movies about spies. Uh-huh. I don't choose the films because of the location. I choose the film because of the investigation that it offers me.
But in the last 10 years, you've done films.
You've done films in Asia, Australia.
In South Africa, I mean.
Back in America.
And then back here. But it makes me wonder what was like when you came on, you signed on to do Patriot Games the first time you went to Washington. How much?
Okay, here's where that comes from, though. It comes from the tent shows that came to my small country town. And I may have told you this story. I've got a dim memory of telling you about the worst circus train that came to town.
Well, this is a great story. I'd love this story. Please tell it again.
Well, you know, before television, which came to Australia in 1956, but not to my town until 1963 when I was 13, there were the tent shows that came through. And the most wonderful circus was Worth's Family Circus, because they came on a train, and my town was at the end of the line. So the train would come in, and all the workers would get out, and they'd erect the big top. And I'd just go down there and hang around and look into the train. Down the back were the workers who were, you know, erecting everything, and they lived sort of 18 to a carriage, sleeping on a Hessian bag. And up the front were the Worth family. And there they had silver service and wonderful bedrooms with four-poster beds and everything on the train. And I'd get up there and look in the window and say, you know what? I want to do this. I want to get on the train. I want to travel with these people. I want to pitch that big top. And I want to put on a show. And I want to be able to be the ringmaster. I want to be the guy that says, okay, bang the drums. Okay, put the spotlight on. And now here comes the clown. And now here comes the acrobats. And here's the elephants. You know, I wanted to be that guy, the one in charge. But mostly I wanted to get on the train. And that's what I did. I left that town, and I'm on the train, and I pitch my tent, and I put on a show. But you know, we're all like that in the movie business, really. The most creative are at heart just good old-fashioned tent showmen. Angelina's like that. She makes money, but you know what? The heart of her motivation is to put the show on, to connect with the audience, to give them their money's worth, to have them roll up. And that's, I think, what makes good filmmakers. It's storytellers and showmen. And by filmmakers, I mean actors, writers, directors, cinematographers. We're all filmmakers.
I think we actually talked about this the first time you hear it, that sense of tribal belonging that, you know, and in a lot of senses, too, these movies you made have been about tribes, you know, these really sort of intensely connected sort of social groups that have very specific rules, and if those rules are violated, you're cast out of the group.
That's true.
There's that case of somebody being thrown out and having to figure out who they are by virtue of being cast out. And some part of that must be a kind of a romantic thing to you too, is it not?
Well, it's also growing up in Australia and watching some of the divisions there.
How do you mean?
Well, particularly between black and white.
Okay, sure.
You know, again, in my hometown, black Australians lived on the reservation, outside of town. So they were in their own group, and white Australians didn't really mix with black Australians. There was an apartheid, an unofficial apartheid.
Yeah, basically until the 70s, more of a rather
offense. And then I went to Sydney to boarding school. No, not boarding school, to a boarding school, but I didn't board. But it was an all-boys Church of England private school with a very strict code of behavior and a sort of a club atmosphere.
And did you feel a part of that club? Or
no,
did
I didn't. I never felt a part of the club. I always felt like the outsider.
You're listening to The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. I'm talking to Philip Noyce, the director of the film Salt. But we haven't talked since you did the pilot for the Showtime series Brotherhood.
Yes.
Which I thought was one of the most evocative and powerful pieces of storytelling I'd seen on TV in a long time.
Oh, thank you. That was due mainly to Blake, a masterful writing. It was also due to the courage of Showtime at the time, back in 2006. You know, The Sopranos changed everything in American television, and that series is a perfect example. It was already slated to go up to Toronto and be one of those cookie-cutter sort of Canadian shows that
basically is nowhere.
Is set nowhere. I went up to Toronto, and they already had my office with my name on it all set up there, and they said, okay, you're going to shoot this series in Canada. And I said, well, look, why don't we just take a little trip down, you know, down to Massachusetts or New England and to Providence and just have a look around and see what we can find that might inspire us, some of the real locations, the real people. The Sopranos showed that American shows couldn't be shot across the border, that in fact Americans were looking for the very fabric of American society in the movements of their characters, in the accents, that people were responding to this, and they didn't want this fake world. They wanted America on screen. And we went down to Providence, and there we met a guy called Steve Feinberg, who'd just become the film commissioner. And he took us to see the governor and sort of said, guys, you know, we hatched a conspiracy. We've got to talk this governor into introducing, you know, some sort of subsidy. And you've got to tell him that Hollywood's going to come. So we went to see the governor at the governor's mansion and said, okay, we'll, you know, if you'll bring in legislation, we'll bring this series here. We'll convince Showtime. Rhode Island introduced legislation that started a subsidy. It was then copied in Massachusetts. It's now all the way down the East Coast. And, of course, it's ricocheted. I mean, they weren't the first to do it, but they were the first on the East Coast to do it. Point of my story is that that series was great because of Blake Masters writing and because Showtime saw the light and let us shoot it where it was set in Providence, Rhode Island. So it had this extra reality. I know you're going to say, but, and the but is, of course, that we've cast an Englishman and an Australian as the two leads. Jason Isaacs and
Jason Clarke.
And Jason Clarke.
Who, and you were saying how you, the reason you cast Jason Clarke was?
Well, you told me we weren't going to reveal any of those things you said. You said we're off the record. Okay, I can tell the story. Jason Clarke, who now has his own series on Fox coming out, he had lived in my basement in Hollywood for about 7 months. And, well, the truth is I thought I'm never going to get him out of the basement unless I send him in to audition for this part, which he did do. And I wasn't there. I was over in Australia, and Blake Masters rang me up and said, that guy, your friend, he's perfect. We're going to cast him. I said, what? Who?
It's the treatment, my guess, is director Philip Noyce. His new film as director is Salt. You got me wondering now. I mean, having gone through, having had, I think, a really exciting career and making a lot of really interesting choices over the last decade, what you feel like you want to do as a filmmaker now? I mean, because you've kind of had a world that you made for yourself. You chose to come back to the studio system and bring a lot of things that you wanted to put in the studio film, a lot of things that are really you. I mean, in a lot of ways, there's more of you in this movie than any studio movie you've ever done.
No, and that's true.
And
that's
I wonder.
Well, I've been trying to make dirt music. It's from the novel by Tim Winton, who's Australia's foremost contemporary novelist.
And what's the book about? You were telling me about it before we started.
The book is about a former country and western singer and songwriter who will be played by Russell Crowe, who loses his extended family in a horrific motor car accident. It has a similar opening to Dead Calm, where Nicole Kidman lost her child. And like Nicole Kidman's character in that movie, well, even worse in a way, he's cauterized with loss. He's completely paralyzed. He's a musician who has lost his voice and his will. Can't play music anymore, and he lives a solitary life on the West Australian coast, alone, almost paralyzed. And he meets a woman who is his resurrection. So it's a love story and a musical. And I hope that we will shoot it next year in Western Australia. Russell has been preparing for it for a number of years. He's written a number and recorded a number of songs that will be featured in the music, in the movie. In fact, he's going on tour later this year with his band, and people around America will be able to hear a lot of the songs well in advance of the movie coming out.
What kind of impact did the book have in Australia when it was published there? Was it
successful? It was a bestseller for about, you know, 2 or 3 years. Yeah, it came out in 2000, and I've been trying to master the adaptation ever since. It's very interior, you know. It's poetic, it's symbolic. So it's just been a difficult translation. Originally, the central character was going to be played by Heath Ledger, and now it's Russell, and Russell's a lot older, of course, than Heath, and so that's meant another round of rewriting to accommodate an older man in the lead role.
I just wondered, too, because you've done a movie, Bone Collector, about physical paralysis. How do you master the idea of doing a movie about emotional and psychological paralysis?
Yeah, well, the Australian outback is the ideal setting. I mean, there ain't nothing there. So it's very easy to close down. But in nothing, you find everything, of course. And that's what happens in the movie. Well, Russell's character eventually finds that the smallest things, the ants, the leaves blowing, the wind, becomes music. And that's where he finds his music again.
It's because you use scores in the movies a lot, not songs very much. Songs composed for a movie.
Right, right. Yeah, but this one will like the Irish film. What was it called? Was it
Once?
Yeah, beautiful film.
Sure.
Songs play an integral part in the storytelling of Dirt Music.
Because I thought finally having a movie with all original songs in it must feel like one of the things you've not done yet.
That's true, although Catch a Fire had a lot of songs which were freedom songs.
Yeah, but those are songs that those people lived by. Yeah. They weren't songs that people...
But they composed them during the anti-apartheid movement.
Yeah.
You know, so...
But these will be songs that... This is basically you're making a musical now in a lot of ways.
We're making a musical, yeah.
Which, again,
except it's a musical about a guy that has lost his ability to play or sing or write music.
And now I see why it was so difficult to do. But you feel you kind of got this in place, though, now. You're basically ready to go.
No, we're still working on the script, and we don't have a dime.
Well, you came to the public radio, the perfect place to come to if you don't have a dime. I exactly know what that's like.
But we've got an actor, we've got a director, we've got almost finished script, and we've got the Western Australian coastline waiting for us.
Well, Phil, it's always weird to have you. We're out of time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
And I want to say something I was saying to you off the air, that when your first appearance, you came here, you talked about how seriously you took the interview, and it's basically informed the way I've done this show over the last 10 years. So I want to thank you personally for what you've contributed to me.
Thank you.
Oh, no, my pleasure. My guest is director Philip Noyce. His new film as director is Salt. Our technical director at KCRW is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. If you have questions about the show today, and I'm sure you do, go to kcrw.com/thetreatment. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.